Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with our chairman of the Republican Party, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Steve, what you up to?
Well, Derek, it's nice to be with you again. We are traveling the state hard right now. We've got about 5 weeks left of the election on the day that we're recording this, and things are now moving at a very fast pace. Probably the biggest news in the country is the Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, being nominated to fill the Supreme Court position that was left vacant with the untimely death of Justice Ginsburg. And Trump made his announcement over the weekend, and immediately the left started piling on. You know, I think that the most remarkable thing about this nominee is that she's still an active mother. She got 7 kids, 2 of which are adopted, and they were adopted out of Haiti. Many of them still at home. And so here's the 2nd youngest person ever nominated to the Supreme Court, but she'll be the only active mother on the court. And that brings a perspective that I think is extremely important in our society today. It is the view that working moms bring to the table. And so I think it's an extremely important, also equally important. She's a strict constructionist as it comes to the Constitution. Then her pro-life credentials are rivaled by none. It will be the single largest, is what we're reading, the single largest philosophical shift in a position maybe since Thurgood Marshall had a replacement named Clarence Thomas. So this is a tremendously important pick for the president. And Mitch McConnell in the Senate says, yes, that they can get the confirmation done. I trust that he has looked at all of the parliamentary procedures that are required, all of the roadblocks that the Democrats can bring up, all of the stalling mechanisms, and he gives them all of the time that they might require under the procedure rules of the Senate, and he still has time to get this nomination done by Election Day. Now, it's important that the nomination take place before the election, because if the question comes to the Supreme Court like it did in 2000 with the hanging Chad, Al Gore, and George W. Bush, then it could be the Supreme Court that has to make the decision. And I think the last thing that anyone wants is a 4-4 tie on the Supreme Court. So that 9th vote is extremely important in that question. But also you have the session of the Supreme Court is beginning in October. And so you need that seat filled because there's some extremely important decisions with regard to business, with regard to, I think, the Affordable Care Act. And so it's necessary that we have, again, a clear vote that comes about by having 9 justices instead of 8. Now, we've got a lot of people talking that it just isn't right that the president shouldn't be nominating anyone in an election year. Well, actually, that is not the historical precedent that has been set. 15 times there have been presidents who have chosen Supreme Court justices during the election year. And so it's not whether or not it's an election year. It's whether the Senate is aligned, i.e. that the Senate is in the same party as the president. That is the determining factor of how these nominations go. So in 15 of those years, 8 times the Senate was the same as the president, and 7 of the 8 times, then the Senate did confirm during an election year a nominee when the party of the presidency and the party of the Senate are the same. Now, 7 times in those 15 years, the parties were different. And as you would expect, 5 of those 7 times, there was no confirmation that took place. So when people point in 2016, well, you didn't confirm President Obama, he nominated, and you didn't confirm President Obama's nominee, well, that's because he was a different party from the Senate. The Republicans held the Senate, and President Obama was a Democrat. And so, again, it fell right along the lines of historical precedent that 80% of the time, or above 80% of the time, that the nominee is not confirmed when you have a different party in the White House than you have in the Senate. And so that really is kind of the chief argument that is being brought up, and yet that doesn't bear merit. Then the next argument is that it's too short a time. Actually, there's still 36 days before Election Day, and you had Justice Ginsburg herself, I think, took 37 days. Then Sandra Day O'Connor took even less than that. I think it was Justice Stevens that maybe only had like 19 days to confirm Justice Stevens. And so the time doesn't seem to be a really valid argument either. But all in all, it's going to play out very, very quickly. I think you're going to see a confirmation, much like Justice Kavanaugh's. I think they're going to try to ruin this justice. I think that they're going to try to ruin Miss Barrett. And when the Democrats do, they're going to be offending the working moms of the country. And so they're in a real pinch. But they also have senators who have questioned whether or not a Catholic should be on the Supreme Court. And in fact, Kamala Harris even asked if a Catholic should be any judge at all, a federal judge. And so you have this tendency towards outright hostility towards the Catholic faith in particular, but the Christian faith in general. And so that's going to play out here before the election. So a lot of excitement left before November the 3rd. So keep your seatbelts fastened. Now, in other news, ballots were found in Pennsylvania. They had been thrown away. So the local district attorney there in Luzerne County in Pennsylvania, plus the office of the U.S. attorney, plus the FBI are looking into this matter. This is what President Trump keeps saying, that he doesn't trust the Democrats to faithfully and correctly count the ballots. And so this is an important discovery. It's a problem that we face in New Mexico a lot. And so we're going to be working overtime to try to make sure that the fair vote is counted. You know, I would very rarely take issue with an election if the vote is fair. But when it's unfair, that's when you get even more partisanship. You get more bitterness between the parties. And so let's just work to have a fair election nationwide, but also a fair election here in New Mexico. So the first debate is in the history books. And I think that it was Dick Morris who pointed out before the debate, he said, this is not actually going to be a debate between Joe Biden and President Trump. It's in fact between Chris Wallace and President Trump. Chris Wallace has really sharpened his swords. And when he comes in contact with the president and seems to have a personal vendetta. And so I will let the listeners judge whether or not that was actually the case. But as many people predicted, the president is well on his game. He says that he practices not with a coach, but in front of the media. And he does. He takes more questions than I've ever seen any politician at any level take. He will stop and chat with the press and take questions spontaneously. Very, very few politicians will do that. So again, I think that the president is strongly on his game. Now, on the COVID news, riots broke out in London this past week over the threat of more COVID restrictions. People are beginning to stand up and say, wait, I want to be safe, but I also want to be free. And when you start saying that you're going to be too safe, then you start giving up your liberties and freedoms. And so even people in England are standing up saying we're going to oppose any new COVID-19 restrictions. And so we'll watch as this plays out across the world. That is, the COVID restrictions are now playing out even more starkly in the U.S. Friday of last week, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, announced that Florida was going to open up completely. No restrictions, no masks, no nothing. And he's saying to the people, you are well aware who's at risk. You should discipline yourselves if you're at risk. If you're less at risk, then don't be going out making things unsafe for other people. But the government is not going to be telling people what they can and can't do. That's in deep contrast to what's going on in New Mexico, where the governor is trying to tell us every move to make. And so, again, the COVID-19 restrictions are going to play heavily in this race as we move towards Election Day. Early voting is now starting within just a few days. So this whole question of how the COVID-19 is handled is going to be one of the keys. The Supreme Court nomination is going to be another big key.
Steve Pierce and I will be back with more Inside New Mexico in just a moment.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. I want to play you a clip from a political forum that took place in Rio Rancho for Sandoval County and the candidates in that area. This is Representative Jason Harper from District 57. He had some interesting things to say about our tax code and other issues in the district. The moderator in this event was Jerry Shallow, who's the president of the Rio Rancho Regional Chamber of Commerce.
I've been extremely effective legislating on your behalf these last 8 years. As an example, last year, I was able to partner with legislators from every walk of life to have passed and signed into law 8 bills. That's huge. That's a big accomplishment. And I do that by working hand in hand with folks on the other side of the aisle. Every single one of my bills is co-sponsored by someone from the other side of the aisle, and we work together on these initiatives. And for my primary focus this next session, I'm continually concerned about the lack of funding that our Rio Rancho Public Schools gets in relation to other schools. And what folks may not understand is our funding formula is set up in a way that there is a base level of funding, but then there are add-ons. And so I've been advocating for this for many years, but other areas that I'm really passionate about, we need real tax reform in the state so that we can bring good jobs here, so that our kids, if they choose, they can stay here and have a good job. Another thing that I'm extremely passionate about, the lottery scholarship. I have been fighting 6 years against the lottery authority who tries to raid that fund, put less money into that fund, and other legislators who would like to give more money to some students and less to others. And again, I partner with my friends on the other side of the aisle to do just that.
Thank you, Representative Harper. Okay, next question's coming right back to you. So what ideas do you have to address the large budget deficit that New Mexico is going to experience next year and in future years?
I want folks to just take a step back and just imagine, you know, which New Mexico would you rather be in? A New Mexico that right now is flush with reserves, has a responsible budget, and instead of talking about slashing, we're talking about what to invest in. Versus a New Mexico that has spent all of their extra cash, is way overspent on the budget, and now we're having to talk about a $1 billion shortfall. I mean, which one would you prefer to be in? And I don't think the question is hard. And you look, and it's not rocket science. You go back and you look over the last 30 years, what's the safe number to raise our state budget by every year? And it's 3%. So if we raised our budget by 3% every year, you would never have to talk about furloughing state employees, about sweeping money from our elementary and middle schools, which has happened over the last several years because of irresponsible spending. And so you can imagine how upset I was when over the last 2 years we've increased our state budget by 20%. 20% over 2 years. That's ridiculous. That's out of control. And so I warned on the House floor that we would have this day come. We would have a reckoning when the oil and gas industry, which was fueling those incredible reserves and surpluses, that day would come to an end, and we would have to be asking all these hard questions again. And I did not expect when I said that on the House floor that 3 months later we'd be coming back and having to address a COVID crisis and a falling out of the oil and gas industry. So we really have a spending problem in New Mexico. And that led to the greatest tax increase in New Mexico state history that was passed to make up for this reckless spending. And I again warned about that on the House floor. I said, this spending will lead to a tax increase because of a self-imposed crisis.
So, Representative Harper, what's your thought on raising taxes?
I have not signed the no new tax pledge because I believe as an academic who has spent thousands of hours studying our tax code, that what we need to do is a complete rebalancing. I don't believe that we should be paying more in taxes, but I believe that some taxes should be raised and some should be lowered. And in that way, we stop looking like this weird sore thumb that we are. And the biggest problem is gross receipts taxes in our state. We are one of only 2 states with a gross receipts tax, and it is a complete job killer, a complete small business killer. So I have been championing for the last 6 years, really, reforming our gross receipts tax. And most people don't even know we have a gross receipts tax. We don't really have a sales tax in New Mexico. When you go to Walmart and you buy something, sales tax, that's what it says on the receipt, but it's not really sales tax. It's gross receipts tax. And us normal consumers don't really see much of that. But what happens is your small businesses, they get killed with this gross receipts tax. And it also scares businesses away that might be considering coming to New Mexico. They hear gross receipts tax and they go, okay, we're not even going to consider coming to New Mexico. So reforming that gross receipts tax, removing all these corporate loopholes that are in there, there's more than 100 exemptions, deductions, and credits, corporate welfare. And I've been, you know, as a Republican, the loudest critic of these and trying to remove them and then use that revenue that comes in to lower the tax rate for everybody so all New Mexico families and small businesses can benefit. And I've had lots of partners all the way across the aisle, but do we have the courage to do it? And that's the problem. We were so close a couple years ago. The bill passed the House unanimously. Every Republican, every Democrat voted for it. But it got to the Senate, and the lobbyists descended. And sadly, it was killed because the lobbyists were going to lose their particular loophole.
That was State Representative Jason Harper. Now I'd like to play you a clip from an interview I did with Robert Godshall. He is running for state representative in District 27. That's the northeast area of Albuquerque. Very interesting man, a retired Border Patrol agent.
One of the things that elected officials often do is try to create an impression that something needs to be done right now because there's nothing else out there. Well, being in federal law enforcement, I know that there's a federal law and it covers most of the things that the Red Flag Act covers. And in a way that provides the potential offender with due process rights. And I think that's the big thing about the Red Flag law is that there is very little due process.
That was a concern for a lot of the Democrats and Republicans that voted against it. Not that they didn't believe that there's a concern about mental health and firearms, but they said it wasn't written well. The bill wasn't written well.
That bill was not written well. It's one of those bills that I have looked at. And, you know, it also, because the governor and some of the legislators were so intent on creating this impression, and you had state or county sheriffs being opposed to it, and other law enforcement personnel being opposed to it, there's also language in the bill that punishes law enforcement for not enforcing the provisions.
So I can probably guess, but I'll ask you anyway. I assume you would not be for defunding the police?
No, I wouldn't be for defunding the police. I think the police do a very important job. There are something like 800,000 law enforcement officers in this country, and the number of incidents that occur, like what we have seen recently that has provoked this violence, is fairly few and far between. Most police officers, and I've worked with a lot, are very good police officers. They do a thankless job, and they work with people who are very difficult to deal with, and we need those police officers, and we need their programs to be funded.
How would you have voted on the Energy Transition Act in New Mexico?
Well, I would have voted against that. I don't think that our future lies with solar and wind-type renewable energy. I think our future is going to be with other types of technology coming down the road. These technologies will be clean. They will also be more energy efficient, because what people don't understand is that solar and wind, it doesn't translate into a high level of efficiency. And it's also down the road, it's going to turn into a lot of dirty waste.
That was Robert Godshall. He is running to be your state representative in District 27. I will be back in just a moment with our chairman of the Republican Party, Steve Pierce, on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico with our chairman of the Republican Party, Steve Pierce. Steve, I understand you have some COVID news from abroad for us.
The riots broke out in London this past week over the threat of more COVID restrictions. People are beginning to stand up and say, wait, I want to be safe, but I also want to be free. And when you start saying that you're going to be too safe, then you start giving up your liberties and freedoms. And so even people in England are standing up saying we're going to oppose any new COVID-19 restrictions. And so we watch as this plays out across the world. That is, the COVID restrictions are now playing out even more starkly in the U.S. Friday of last week, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, announced that Florida was going to open up completely. No restrictions, no masks, no nothing. And he's saying to the people, you are well aware who's at risk. You should discipline yourselves if you're at risk. If you're less at risk, then don't be going out and making things unsafe for other people. But the government is not going to be telling people what they can and can't do. That's in deep contrast to what's going on in New Mexico, where the governor is trying to tell us every move to make. And so COVID-19 restrictions are going to play heavily in this race as we move towards Election Day. Early voting is now starting within just a few days. So this whole question of how the COVID-19 is handled is going to be one of the keys. The Supreme Court nomination is going to be another big key. Now, my friend Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, over the weekend, she released a video in response to Rachel Maddow's comments that COVID was breaking out in South Dakota and that South Dakota was now being an exporter of COVID. She's just trying to turn off the tourism that would go into South Dakota otherwise. So Kristi Noem, first of all, responds, "I quit inciting people to fear." Then she goes out and she has her shotgun and there's a bird flushed out. She takes three shots at the bird. She hit it on the last shot. But her point was, and what she says in her comments, is this is the way we social distance here in South Dakota. We're going to play that clip for you as she's making those comments, and then you'll hear the three gunshots there. But Kristi Noem is truly of the outdoors. She grew up on a ranch. She and her husband now own a ranch. And so it's very telling how she answers Rachel Maddow. I think that strength in response to people in the media who are supposed to be unbiased, but they're so biased they can hardly contain themselves. And so it requires political figures to stand up and speak out, and that's exactly what Kristi is doing. In this video clip, you can go on our webpage and look at it, or on our Facebook and see it, but you can hear it here.
Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota. This is how we do social distancing in our state.
That was great.
Less COVID, more hunting.
As we close out, I was reminded of a fact that I had heard many years ago and had not really put it into place until now. But we were at one of the New Mexico on its knees prayer events in Alto. One of the preachers reminded us that the revolution was actually conducted by a very small group of Americans, that Americans in general, 50%, were sort of wishy-washy. If the British won, they were going to be strongly on their side. If the Americans were to pull it out, they were going to be strongly on our side. And so 50% basically were on the sidelines and willing to take whichever side won. Well, 25% really deeply supported the British, and so they were the Tories, and they poured all their efforts into defeating the revolution itself. So you had the 25% left, and they were committed to the revolution. But when you got down to it, only 8% actually stood up and fought in the revolution or committed their resources to the revolution. The other 17% just basically said, "We're all for you," and then they watched from a distance. And so 8% of the population of America at the time of the revolution took on this fight with the mightiest army and the mightiest navy in the world at that time. No one gave them a chance. No one gave them a prayer. But it's because of prayer. It's because of their unified belief that they wanted this one nation under God. It was their unified belief that they wanted a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, that they engaged in this revolution to free themselves from England. And during the years of that revolution, great costs were incurred to many of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. They were the ones that were targeted by the Britons. A lot of them were either captured and killed or hanged or lost their fortunes, whatever it is. But understand that we're in a moment like that, that many of the people in the country are kind of watching which way it goes. You've got hardcore group on the left who are saying they want to destroy the country and what it stands for. And then you have another group on the right saying they hate the destruction that's going on. They love what the country stands for, but they're not out knocking doors. They're not out influencing people. And so today, as you listen to the program, I'm asking you to be one of the 8%. Be one of the people who stand up and fight for this country. Be one of the people who go door to door and knock doors asking people to vote for the president and to turn New Mexico red. Be one of the people that talks to your neighbors and your friends and your family, the people at church. The second time that you talk to people, many times they'll change. A lot of people can say no one time, but very few people can say no a second time. But even if you ever get a call from one of the 800 salesmen, they're going to sell you light bulbs or siding for your house or whatever it is. They always make you say no at least three times, sometimes more. So understand the power of staying with your argument. Be out and let's talk to people. Let's convince this state to turn red. Let's convince this state to elect Donald Trump. And if we do, then Donald Trump is going to be our next president. He's done dramatic things in term one. He'll do even more dramatic things in term two. So, Derek, exciting show today. I appreciate all of our guests who appeared on the show. That's a tribute that they're willing to come on and talk about their ideas, talk about their family, their background. But I appreciate you always producing and recording this show and then getting out to the different stations. So God bless you all. God bless this country as we move forward into the last 5 weeks of this election season.
Thanks so much, Steve. I enjoy the work. And for our listeners that want to follow Steve's advice and get more involved, you can do that by going to the party's webpage at www.gopnm.org. You'll get the latest news, upcoming events, information about the party's elected officials, voter resources, and all kinds of important and useful information about the party and its mission. You can also listen to previous Inside New Mexico podcasts from the website and go to the party's Facebook page. Check out what's going on the party's Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. As Steve mentioned, the Republican Party is always looking for volunteers to help them with their mission to win New Mexico for President Trump and turn the roundhouse red. You can call party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We look forward to meeting with you again next week right here on Inside New Mexico.